Black Atlantics use Afrobeat, rock, funk, and highlife to create a unique African, American, British, and Caribbean sound. Opening the show are DJ Quay and DJ Goldilocks. More information for OB Original and the Black Atlantics Highlife Dance Party at the Turf Club is available at first-avenue.com.
Fresh Air Community Radio is KFAI-FM, Minneapolis, St. Paul, online and archived at kfai.org, the community's true voice.
You are listening to North Star Stories, Voices from Where We Live, a daily newscast about what it means to live in Minnesota.
Today, why it's going to cost more to buy cannabis. Then, anxiety grows for the state's Jewish community, and a fatal reminder about the dangers of cliff diving. I'm Gracie J. Minnesota is raising the price on marijuana before legal sales have even started. Lawmakers recently approved a 50% increase to the state's cannabis tax, bumping it from 10 to 15%. This now moves Minnesota from one of the lowest marijuana tax rates in the country to one of the highest. Lawmakers are also scrapping a plan to share that tax money with local governments. Altogether, the move is expected to bring in more than $200 million over 4 years, with $76.5 million going straight to the state's general fund. Some worry the higher tax could send buyers back to the black market. In today's main story, as the conflict in the Middle East grows, anti-Semitism is at a record high in our country. As Catherine DeSalle reports, that is having a significant impact on Minnesota's Jewish community.
A gunman chants as he's arrested, accused of murdering a young Jewish couple in Washington, D.C. about a month ago. A few weeks later, in Boulder, Colorado, at a rally calling for the release of Israeli hostages, a suspect sets people on fire. He too yells Free Palestine as police arrest him. Some consider Free Palestine and similar chants to be a call for peace. For many Jews, like Jessica from St. Paul, it invokes fear.
Places where I used to feel totally at home are no longer safe for me.
Jessica recounts a terrifying incident at her Minneapolis synagogue last fall.
My family were at Temple Israel in Rosh Hashanah when a gunman showed up there. He was chased off by security and caught a couple days later.
Police arrested that suspect without incident. But according to the ADL, which tracks anti-Semitic assaults, harassment, and vandalism, anti-Semitism is at a record high. As a result, Jessica says she experiences the world differently now. She describes a recent concert she attended.
And I started looking around at the crowd, and all of a sudden I started getting really nervous. I just felt if they knew they were in the presence of a Jew, would my safety be guaranteed? And I didn't feel that it would.
Communities across Minnesota have held multiple protests supporting Palestine. For some members of the Jewish community, including Jessica, seeing these displays can cause anxiety and fear.
The messaging that you're putting out there, Free Palestine, resistance by all means necessary, that means real violence. That means real danger.
Jessica says many of the pro-Palestinian protesters don't understand the full meaning of the messages they're repeating. Some Jews interpret the chant, "From the river to the sea," as calling for the elimination of Israel and all Jews worldwide. Ian, another Jewish community member, believes that repeating these messages do not help either side.
What tends to happen among groups is that they tend to hunker down and start sharing their own opinions. They will exclude anyone from their groups who doesn't quite share their opinions. Everybody's basically repeating over and over the same messages. And as a result, the groups here in America just hate each other, but there's not been any positive impact on ending this war or returning the hostages.
Ian says that he is more aware now than ever for the potential of violence when he attends Jewish events. He hopes that speaking up about injustices will stop the violence.
It would be great if Jewish groups were vocal on anti-Islamic statements and that Islamic groups were more clear that anti-Semitism is a bad thing.
As the war in Gaza continues, the Minnesota Jewish community highlights the urgent need to listen, support, and work towards peace. For North Star Stories, I'm Catherine DeSalle.
You are listening to North Star Stories. A tragic accident has officials warning Minnesotans about the dangers of cliff diving. A 27-year-old man recently died after diving into a flooded mine pit on Minnesota's Iron Range. Officials say he jumped from a cliff into the Genoa mine pit near Gilbert, but never resurfaced. A witness saw him come up briefly before disappearing. Rescue crews searched the water and recovered his body later that evening. The St. Louis County Sheriff's Office is still investigating the accident. Officials say cliff diving into abandoned mines continues to be a problem.
North Star Stories is produced by Ambers, diverse radio for Minnesota's communities, with support from the McKnight Foundation and the state of Minnesota, online at ambers.org.
In today's segment, a new warning from TSA about weapons and carry-ons. Then, farmers may soon be able to grow produce all winter long, and federal flood relief is heading our way. I'm Chantel Sings. The Transportation Security Administration, or TSA, confiscated two loaded handguns in just one day earlier this month at Minneapolis-St. Paul International Airport. It's illegal to pack a weapon in your carry-on. Passengers who bring firearms to TSA checkpoints face federal penalties. Officials encourage passengers to pack smart and start with an empty bag. Passengers can travel with firearms in their checked baggage if it is unloaded, packed properly, and declared at the check-in counter. TSA officers have found 22 firearms at MSP checkpoints this year. Next, a new type of greenhouse will allow state farmers to extend the growing season, giving farmers the possibility of an income stream into the slow winter months. Britt Ahmet has the story.
Minnesota farmers may soon be able to raise and sell produce all winter long, thanks to the deep winter greenhouse.
So about 10 years ago, there were a couple of farmers in southwestern Minnesota that wanted to grow crops in the winter, and they didn't want to use a lot of delivered heat.
Greg Swazer works with the University of Minnesota Extension.
So they cracked open their old books from the 70s and found a way to develop a greenhouse that captured solar heat, stored it in a thermal mass underground, and they use that to heat the growing space at night when the sun goes down, and they grew crops throughout the winter.
The new development came when those farmers partnered with the university to make a larger farm-scale version.
We're testing out this concept and seeing how well it works and whether it's something that farmers can use to economically and feasibly grow winter crops throughout the winter for sale to their customers.
Carrie Calvo is one of five farmers participating in the university's deep winter greenhouse study. Her Owl Bluff farm in southeastern Minnesota's Houston County got a grant to cover part of the greenhouse's cost, but she and her crew had to install it themselves.
So it's 60 feet long by 16 feet wide, and I want to say 10 feet high at the highest point.
There are key modifications that differentiate it from the high tunnel greenhouse you typically see dotting farms. Basically metal ribs covered in plastic.
It's basically super insulated on all sides except for a steep glazing wall on the front that faces south, and it's set at the right angle to maximize solar gain during the coldest months of the year.
That allows it to store and retain heat even through long, cold nights, with little to no reliance on heaters, which could saddle farmers with an expensive electric or gas bill. Carrie plans to grow greens and herbs in her deep winter greenhouse.
Right now, we are hoping to do a winter CSA,
through which she could offer boxes of produce to subscribers every month throughout the winter. Normally, her income would stop at Christmas and pick up sometime around April. The greenhouse could prove to be an economic lifeline for farmers, says Greg Swazer.
We have a very strong local food movement in Minnesota. The problem is a lot of those farms don't make an awful lot of money, so any way we can find to make them a little more successful.
But that's not the only goal with the deep winter greenhouses.
There's been a number of things that have threatened our food supply. You know, COVID. If it gets too hot or the water dries up in the desert southwest, that's where the vast majority of our winter vegetable crops are grown. If we're unable to rely on that, this would be a good backup.
For North Star Stories, this is Britt Ahmet.
You are listening to North Star Stories. Parts of southern Minnesota are still recovering from the devastating floods last June that destroyed the Rapidan Dam. Crews repairing the damage now have an additional $5 million from the federal government to help. The funds will be used to repair and replace damaged and destroyed roads and bridges in Blue Earth County. With the County 9 bridge out, motorists and farmers are forced on a 15-mile detour. That road isn't expected to reopen for another 2 to 3 years. The state is also receiving federal funding to help repair roads in Minnesota's Chippewa and Superior National Forests in northern Minnesota.
North Star Stories is produced by Ambers, diverse radio for Minnesota's communities, with support from the McKnight Foundation and the state of Minnesota, online at ambers.org.
In today's stories, the state is looking for feedback as part of Pride Month. Then, when the tornado siren sounds, do you know what to do? And a national park in northern Minnesota gets a new visitor center. I'm Gracie J. Well, the state is looking for feedback from the LGBTQIA2S+ community. The Council on LGBTQIA2S+ serves citizens who identify as lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender, queer, intersex, asexual, and or two-spirit. The goal of the organization is to ensure the state provides economic, social, legal, and political equity. The organization is conducting a statewide survey. The answers help to direct the state's funding and resources. The survey is confidential and open through June 30th. It is available online through the agency's website. Next, tornado season is ongoing in Minnesota, but are you familiar with tornado safety? Reporter Jama Jama explores tornado terminology, common safety misconceptions, and why understanding tornado safety is so important.
Outdoor warning sirens, often referred to as tornado sirens, are a familiar sound throughout Minnesota. But do you actually know what the sirens mean or how to stay safe? Understanding the differences between a tornado watch versus a warning, knowing when to take shelter, and keeping track of dangerous weather are all key parts of tornado safety.
Being aware of the potential for severe weather is probably the most important thing, because then once you know of that potential, you'll be that much more prepared.
Warning coordination meteorologist Todd Krause tracks potentially dangerous weather patterns at the National Weather Station in Chanhassen.
There are 6 weather offices that cover all of Minnesota, and so each weather office has a warning coordination meteorologist, and our role is to work with others on all sorts of plans and procedures with regard to storm warnings, weather safety, and so on.
Understanding tornado safety starts with knowing the terminology, so you know what to do if a storm hits.
Sometimes people can think of it in regards to food. With a watch, the ingredients are there. It's possible to get a tornado, but it doesn't mean you're actually getting one. And once you put them together and things are made, you know, that's the warning.
There's often confusion as to what the sirens actually mean, so let's clear that up before diving into the details.
The sirens will typically go off for any tornado warning that we issue, or if there is severe straight-line wind of 80 miles per hour, that's enough to take down trees and start causing damage to buildings. And so the sirens really just tell you, check out, get more information.
Knowing that there's a threat is important. But how do you actually stay safe when a tornado warning has been issued and the sirens go off?
Be inside and away from windows and on the lowest level possible. So if you're in an office building, you know, getting away from windows, maybe in a stairwell. And that's true if you're at home or in a cabin or wherever. If you are out walking or jogging or something like that, get to a place of safety, some house nearby perhaps, or some building nearby. Being in some interior room away from windows.
According to the Minnesota Department of Natural Resources, June is historically the month in which the most tornadoes occur, and they can form quickly. Experts like Todd recommend staying safe by having multiple ways to track weather, such as a weather radio and downloading a mobile weather app. All Minnesotans can keep track of conditions near them on weather.gov. For North Star Stories, I'm Jama Jama.
You are listening to North Star Stories. Voyageurs National Park has a new visitor center. Voyageurs is Minnesota's only national park and is located along the Canadian border. Funding for the project, which includes a new campground, comes from a community-led effort by Crane Lake Township. Inside, visitors will find displays on regional Indigenous history and cultural stories. The grand opening of the visitor center is part of the celebrations for Voyageurs' 50th anniversary.
North Star Stories is produced by Ambers, diverse radio for Minnesota's communities, with support from the McKnight Foundation and the state of Minnesota, online at ambers.org.
In today's broadcast, measles cases in the U.S. are on the rise. Then, a new law every driver in Minnesota needs to know about. And controversy surrounding a transgender softball player from our state sparks nationwide attention. I'm Chantel Sings. Measles cases are on the rise across the country, including here in Minnesota. Officials say so far this year, there have been about 1,200 reported cases in the U.S., a dramatic increase from the 285 cases last year, nearly quadrupling the annual total, and we're only halfway through the year. Three people have died from the disease. Minnesota had five confirmed cases this year. Officials say most of the measles cases are among people who have not received the vaccine. The Centers for Disease Control says vaccines are still the best way to prevent measles. Ahead, a new lane-sharing law for motorcyclists is going into effect on July 1st. Reporter Kylie Kendall has what all Minnesota motorists need to know.
If you put the word motorcycle and safety in the same sentence, I'm going to listen.
Motorcycles in Minnesota will soon be able to share traffic lanes with other vehicles during traffic jams. Lane sharing, which includes lane splitting and filtering, will become legal for motorcyclists on July 1st. Jay Bach, Minnesota's Motorcycle Safety Administrator, helps explain exactly what Minnesota drivers should expect.
Lane filtering and splitting are the same in the sense that the motorcycle, in Minnesota anyway, is traveling between lanes of traffic with two lanes going in the same direction.
The key differences between the two are the movement of traffic and how fast the motorcyclist can go. Splitting is when traffic is moving.
If you're doing the splitting, it's no more than 25 miles an hour. So if traffic is moving, it's 25.
And filtering is when traffic is fully stopped.
You know, the filtering is a 15 mile an hour permission. So if traffic is stopped, the motorcyclist cannot exceed 15 miles an hour.
Motorcyclists can only split or filter if traffic is moving at 25 miles per hour or slower. Any faster, and the motorcyclist must get back into a lane.
It's not intended for this to be used at highway speeds, going in between traffic at, you know, 30, 35, 40 or higher miles per hour. That's not the intent of this.
Motorcyclists also cannot drive on the outside of lanes or vehicles, only in between. They cannot ride on the middle white line either, but have to be sharing a lane. This new law is a big step in the ongoing conversation about motorcycle safety in Minnesota. Bach said that since motorcycles don't have the same protections as cars and traffic jams are such tight spaces to navigate, this law will help prevent motorcycles from getting rear-ended.
So this takes them out of that and puts them into a safer position navigating lanes to take them away from the end of the line.
But not every motorcyclist agrees.
I think safety is an excuse to do it.
David Weiner, a Minnesota motorcyclist, doesn't think the new law will help with safety.
I know they do it in California, and it works for them down there. I think it's, in my opinion as a motorcyclist, I think it's dangerous to do.
Weiner said he knows a lot of motorcyclists who lane share right now, even though it's not legal yet, and he doesn't agree with it.
I think anything can happen from somebody quick throwing a door open to throw a cigarette out or because they're going to get sick or anything.
Nonetheless, lane sharing will be legal on July 1st. Jay Bach said he's preaching one thing to all Minnesota drivers, patience.
Take your time. Make sure you have the room and the space to be able to do this safely.
For more information about the upcoming law on July 1st, you can visit the Minnesota Department of Public Safety website. This is Kylie Kendall for North Star Stories.
You are listening to North Star Stories. A trans softball player from Minnesota is sparking a social media debate that's generated millions of views. It began with a post from Riley Gaines calling the high schooler a boy. Gaines is a former Division I swimmer who's now an anti-trans activist. Well-known Olympian Simone Biles responded, accusing Gaines of bullying. Their exchange comes a few months after the Trump administration threatened to pull funding from schools that allow transgender girls to compete. Biles has since apologized for her comments, but also said kids shouldn't be targeted for what she called a flawed system.
North Star Stories is produced by Ambers, diverse radio for Minnesota's communities, with support from the McKnight Foundation and the state of Minnesota, online at ambers.org.
Today, new help for those spending time behind bars. Then, sacred items return to their native tribes, and officials say we're facing an elevated risk of power outages this summer. I'm Gracie J. Minnesota is one of five states joining a new national initiative to expand college access for students who have been incarcerated, arrested, charged, or convicted. The one-year initiative aims to improve prison education programs by aligning them with workforce needs. The program also ensures that credentials students earn while incarcerated are recognized and valued in the job market. To make this happen, the state will build stronger partnerships between educational and correctional institutions. Other states included in the program are Arizona, Kentucky, Louisiana, and Virginia. Up next, after a legacy of exploiting Native people to develop educational institutions' collections, reparations are slowly being made. Dana Standing Cloud has the story of sacred items returning to where they belong.
The University of Minnesota Twin Cities Wiseman Art Museum is currently in the process of returning sacred items to the Hopi people in eastern Arizona.
For Native folks, we've always felt that in our bones and in our bodies. It's important for Native people to have their items returned for a lot of spiritual reasons.
Misty Blue is a citizen of the White Earth Nation of Ojibwe. She is a professional researcher for Grassroots Solutions in Minneapolis. Last year, the 1990 Native American Graves Protection and Repatriation Act, or NAGPRA, was revised to increase punishments to institutions holding human remains, sacred objects, or ceremonial items of Native people.
So a lot of museums don't necessarily have relationships with a lot of the communities that are reflected in their collections.
Juan Lucero, who is Isleta Pueblo, is a guest curator at the Wiseman Art Museum. In addition to returning sacred items in accordance with NAGPRA, the Wiseman launched an artist-in-residence program.
It was a way for the Wiseman to kind of have more of a developing relationship with the communities in New Mexico, but then also developing community relationship with the tribes here in the Twin Cities.
The artist-in-residence program selected Clifford Frawa from the Jemez Pueblo, a sculptor and stone carver for over 40 years.
He is constantly teaching community members from Jemez and from other Pueblos and other Native community members.
For Misty Blue, examining and rectifying the history of stolen objects is a part of a larger project to address the ways institutions have benefited at the expense of Indigenous Minnesotans.
It's helpful to Native communities and tribes to have more understanding of how institutions operate.
Misty is one of the key researchers of the Truth Project, a Native-led initiative that stands for Toward Recognition and University Tribal Healing. The Truth Project released a report revealing that the University of Minnesota benefited from the exploitation and erasure of Indigenous people since its inception.
So the Truth Project will really expose the land expropriation process that our land grab universities undertook in order to establish themselves. We were able to show how that was a violent process.
The Minnesota Indian Affairs Council is now using the Truth Project report to push the university to expand their current tuition waiver for Indigenous students.
Wiseman is playing an essential role in supporting and creating safe space in places that are usually places of discomfort and discrimination for all of us as Native people.
The sacred items in the Wiseman Art Museum's possession are set to be returned to the Hopi people in October. This is Deanna Standing Cloud for North Star Stories.
You are listening to North Star Stories. A new report warns Minnesota's power grid may fall short during heat waves this summer. The Minnesota Rural Electric Association, or MREA, says the region faces an elevated risk of energy shortfalls during extreme weather. The MREA says retiring coal and gas plants leave the state in an energy deficit that renewables can't always cover during peak demand periods. The agency is calling for an all-tech-on-deck approach to avoid outages, saying the state may need to lean on nuclear energy in the future.
North Star Stories is produced by Ambers, diverse radio for Minnesota's communities, with support from the McKnight Foundation and the state of Minnesota, online at ambers.org.
This is Minnesota Native News. I'm Marie Rock. Up first this week, a look at music from Indigenous artists across Minnesota and Turtle Island. Deanna Standing Cloud tells us more.
The second annual Anishinaabe Music and Arts Festival was held at the Northern Lights Casino earlier this month on Juneteenth. It showcased Indigenous music of all genres and art vendors.
Arts and Music Festival was designed to give our local, regional, and national Native folks a platform to play their music and put their art out there.
That's Chris Bedeau, member of the Leech Lake Band of Ojibwe and general manager of KOJB Radio in Cass Lake.
I think it's important nowadays that we kind of brand our own folks out here and get our names out in all entertainment, arts, crafts, that kind of thing. I feel very strongly about that. As a musician myself, I find it hard to get played or airtime.
Bedeau planned the festival with support from community collaborators and funders.
And I thought it was important that we provide this particular outlet for our local talent and regional talent and national for that matter.
For Chris, it was important that the festival highlight a range of genres within Indigenous music.
We got a lot of talent with different types of genres within our culture. I like to make sure that that's expressed so the external community can understand who we are, what we are, and what we do.
KOJB has plans to continue supporting musicians in the community.
Also, we're building a recording studio down in the basement at KOJB. Off this, we're going to do an artist spotlight on KOJB. We're going to host highlight a performer every month.
For Minnesota Native News, I'm Deanna Standing Cloud.
Up next, reporter Emma Needham has more about Indigenous author Marika Moss and her new book, Sweetgrass and Soul Food.
It started as just like scratching poems down.
That's Marika Moss, co-owner of Meshkiki Studios in Minneapolis, a creative and educational studio offering workshops on traditional Indigenous crafts.
I'm going to be honest, I'm not really somebody who would run to the poetry section in like a Barnes & Noble or anything, but I would give it to my friends and they're like, that's poetry, Marika.
Earlier this month, Moss, who is Black and an enrolled member of the Mandan, Hidatsa, and Arikara Nation, released a memoir.
It's called Sweetgrass and Soul Food. It's a play on my identity of both my Indigenous and Black side. So the inspiration was just basically there's not that much literature from an Afro-Indigenous perspective out there. So I was just like, you know what? I'll just create it.
Moss will host a launch party at Indigenous Roots Cultural Center in St. Paul next month.
And that will be July 6th from 11 to 3 p.m. So we're sort of doing like a barbecue brunch situation. And there's going to be Black and Native uncles on the grill throwing down soul food.
bouncy house, photo booth. There's going to be a silent auction, and that is to benefit Indigenous roots.
For more information on Moss's book and launch party, find Meshkiki Studios on social media.
And I always say picking up the book is just a fun conversation with me while we drink lemonade on the front porch.
For Minnesota Native News, I'm Emma Needham.
Minnesota Native News is produced by Ampers, diverse radio for Minnesota's communities, made possible by funding from the Minnesota Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund and the citizens of Minnesota.
Slowly and carefully along the skating surface, if you do fall down, make sure you get up right away. This is DJ TJ inviting you to join me at Skate Town USA, KFAI's Roller Disco Skate Sesh Refresh, each week from 2 to 4 p.m., on KFAI Fresh Air Community Radio.